Welcome to Talk Nation Radio, a half-hour discussion of politics as if the people mattered. I'm David Swanson. Republicans in Congress are seeking to hold Attorney General Eric Holder in contempt. To put this in a little bit of context, among those who refused to comply with congressional subpoenas, never mind requests, while George W. Bush was president, were the Department of Justice, the Secretary of State, not inclined, was Condi's explanation, the vice president, who preemptively announced he would probably not comply with such silliness and didn't, the White House counsel, the White House chief of staff, the White House political director, the White House deputy chief of staff, the White House deputy political director, the White House office of management and budget, and so on. There's a collection of these subpoenas, the targets being Republicans, over at democrats.com/subpoenas. Congress held lots of the aforementioned bums in contempt, as did most of the rest of us. But it didn't actually hold them. In fact, it expected the Justice Department to do the enforcement of the subpoenas, even those addressed to the Justice Department. In decades gone by, Congress used to make use of a power called inherent contempt, which meant the power to preserve its own existence by compelling witnesses to cooperate and holding them in jail on Capitol Hill until they saw fit to do so. No more. Now inherent contempt is just that feeling that bubbles up in the stomach of your average American when a member of Congress walks by. Don't believe me? Check the polls. Pink slime in your hamburgers is significantly more popular than Congress. Now, the blue and red slime in Congress have switched sides. Now Republicans want to hold a Democratic Attorney General in contempt. Get in line, schmucks. This is a government with secret trade deals worse than NAFTA, secret meetings to let health insurance executives reform health care, secret drone wars, not-so-secret wars launched in defiance of Congress, executive orders throwing out half the Bill of Rights, and wild claims of state secrets powers made in courts to protect law-breaking predecessors, corporate partners, and themselves. This is a White House that won't tell Congress how its murder-by-drone program is legal or how it justifies killing unidentified people with so-called signature strikes. This is an administration that tells senators to their faces that they will be informed of any war on Syria or Iran after it has begun. These guys used to hide the White House visitor logs and now just hold their meetings away from the White House. John Dean and Daniel Ellsberg are in agreement that secrecy has reached new heights. And now, finally, you want to hold them in contempt? Get in line. Most contemptible, of course, is that virtually nobody in Washington gives a rat's derriere about the institution of Congress, or the representation of majority will, or enforcement of the rule of law against the powerful. The branches of government are now the Democratic Party and the Republican Party. The remnants of the previous system are employed for motivations created in the current one. So when the president is a Democrat, the Republicans in Congress toil and sweat to give him the power to lock people up without charge, deploy the military within the United States, spy into every corner of the land without probable cause, etc., because they want those powers for Republican presidents and for the military. But they also go after the Democratic administration viciously, on usually less serious but highly inflammatory matters. Meanwhile, the Democrats, who are outraged by any and all presidential abuses by Republicans, are eager to help Obama dwarf King George III's list of crimes before the 4th of July. The trouble is not that we just happen to be trading back and forth between horribly bad presidents from one party and even worse presidents from the other. The trouble is that when you give absolute power to an individual, it corrupts him absolutely. Listen to all the lamentations over Egypt's weak president. The founders of the United States allowed this country to last as long as it has by creating a weak president. Egypt's problem is an empowered military. Our problem in the United States is an empowered military, corporatocracy, and president. What we need is power for the people and their legitimate representatives. electing a really great all-powerful dictator from a benevolent and progressive third party is no more of a solution than is lesser evilism. A move toward an actual solution would be observable if Congress actually came to care about being more than a crowd of court jesters. It could start by enforcing all outstanding subpoenas and requests from the past 12 years, regardless of party. We turn now to a guest who can add more context still to these matters, Elizabeth Holtzman. Liz Holtzman was a member of Congress and of the House Judiciary Committee that voted for the Articles of Impeachment against President Richard Nixon in 1973. She proposed the bill that in 1973 required that so-called state secrets claims be evaluated on a case-by-case basis. She co-authored the special prosecutor law that was then allowed to lapse just in time for the George W. Bush crime wave after Kenneth Starr made such a mockery of it during the Whitewater Lewinsky scandals. She was there for the creation of the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act in 1978. She has served on the Nazi War Crimes and Japanese Imperial Government Records Interagency Working Group, bringing long-escaped war criminals to justice. And she was, of course, a very outspoken and powerful advocate for the now failed cause of impeaching George W. Bush. Liz Holtzman's new book, co-authored with Cynthia Cooper, is called Cheating Justice: How Bush and Cheney Attacked the Rule of Law and Plotted to Avoid Prosecution and What We Can Do About It. Liz Holtzman, thanks for being on Talk Nation Radio.
David, it's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
So the first part of that title is something that many people are perhaps still not aware of. That is that Bush and Cheney were aware, you seem to argue, that they were committing crimes and were very careful to try to protect themselves. Is that the case?
Yes. Cynthia Cooper and I did a lot of research for this book because the basic principle is accountability. How do we have accountability for presidential misdeeds that are abuses of power? When Bush was in office, the accountability mechanism was impeachment. Congress let that lapse, did not use it. And when he left office, Cynthia and I looked at the laws and said, well, what else can be done? And there are a number of criminal statutes that we found were applicable. In our research, of course, what we discovered was not only that the laws are applicable, but that the Bush administration was very, very aware that unless they took action, they could be prosecuted for what they were doing. So they did a variety of things to try to insulate themselves from accountability. But there were so many things that they did that were wrong, and not just wrong, but potentially criminal, that they didn't plug every loophole. So there is still ground and still room for taking action to hold Bush, Cheney, and the rest of that top team accountable for their misdeeds. We can't have impunity in the United States. We are not supposed to be a banana republic. We are not supposed to say that anyone is above the law. And so if that's the case, then we have to apply the law to President Bush and Cheney.
And the crimes that they committed, in your book, you seem to suggest that three categories are the most hopeful in terms of actually bringing prosecution. Those are lying to Congress, wiretapping Americans, and conspiring to torture. If so, what did they do to protect themselves from those charges?
There were two statutes when Bush and Cheney were involved in authorizing the mistreatment and torture of detainees. And there's no factual dispute about that because Bush has acknowledged in his book and in TV interviews, and so has Cheney, that they were involved in authorizing waterboarding and other things. The question is, are they legally accountable? There are two statutes that apply. One was the War Crimes Act. War Crimes Act of 1996 made it a federal crime, a felony, to violate certain provisions of the Geneva Convention. And those provisions included the cruel, inhuman treatment of detainees. Well, cruel and inhuman is just about everything that they did. I mean, stress positions, keeping people in very cold temperatures, dousing them with icy water, smashing them into walls, all that list that was approved by President Bush and Cheney would fall under the category of cruel and inhuman. So that was very worrisome because then they could be prosecuted. Well, they said, how are we going to get around this? And we know that they said, how are we going to get around this? Because there's a memorandum from Alberto Gonzalez to the president saying, how can we get around it? Because if we don't get around it, we could be prosecuted by independent or special prosecutors. And their gimmick, so to speak, was to opt out of the Geneva Convention. It was their theory, since the War Crimes Act was designed to implement the Geneva Convention. If the U.S. government opted out of the Geneva Convention, the War Crimes Act wouldn't apply. Well, that reasoning wasn't very good, but that's what they hung their hat on until Supreme Court said Geneva Conventions do apply. Oh, my goodness. Panic in the White House. Now we can be prosecuted. What are we going to do? A lot of meetings are held, and they finally decide that they're going to rewrite the War Crimes Act, which they do, and they slip it through Congress, because they get everyone, including the good government groups, to focus on other aspects of a bill that they're proposing. And what they did was rewrite the War Crimes Act, weaken it completely, and then make it retroactive. That's a very good example of how the White House was exquisitely alert to the criminal implications of their conduct and the steps they were willing to take. Now, when it came to the other statute, which is the anti-torture statute, they said, well, how are we going to deal with this? It's a federal crime to torture somebody outside the United States. Well, they gave the task to a man called John Yoo to explain the Torture Act in such a way that it wouldn't apply to most kinds of torture. And that's what John Yoo did. We go through an analysis of that, and we say you can't rely on your lawyer's opinion for a variety of reasons, not the least of which is that you can't tell your lawyer this is the result we want, and then rely on the opinion, say we relied on the opinion. That's nonsense. But just to give you an idea also of how blatantly absurd Yoo's opinion was, Yoo came up with this idea that torture, to be torture, had to be the equivalent, you had to create the equivalent of pain that was equal to the pain of death. This is a nonsense definition, because nobody knows what the pain of death is. And in fact, we know that you knew that it was nonsense as well, because he was asked by the Office of Professional Responsibility, well, Mr. Yoo, oh, what is the pain of death? He said, I don't know. I mean, that's actual transcription of what you said. And we are supposed to say that that gives the president immunity from prosecution? Definitely not. And so I think there are substantial grounds to believe that President Bush and Vice President Cheney and maybe others who would be included in such a prosecution should be investigated by a special prosecutor to determine whether the laws were violated. You have an investigation, the prosecutor determines if a crime is committed, and then it's presented to a grand jury, and the grand jury indicts, you have a trial, and that's the normal course of things. And presidents can't be exempted from that just because they're president.
Presumably there are statutes of limitations that apply, at least in cases where the torture was not to the point of death. I believe there's no limitation on how long you can wait to prosecute if the victim died. Is that correct? And where
Yes.
are we on that timetable?
Well, there is no statute of limitations in cases of torture where people died. But the people whom we know were waterboarded, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed and two others, did not die. And so then the question is, what's the statute of limitations there? We did some very careful research on this, too. And it turns out that the one good thing that the Patriot Act did was to abolish a statute of limitations in any case where torture creates a risk of death or serious bodily injury. Now, waterboarding, we know, creates a risk of death, and it's not because Liz Holtzman says that or David Swanson says that, but the CIA's own Office of Medical Services did an analysis of the risks involved in the various enhanced interrogation procedure, and guess what? The risk of waterboarding is drowning, i.e., death. So under the Patriot Act, there is no statute of limitations for torture when we're talking about waterboarding, in my opinion. So I think we don't have to worry about that. But in the other cases of the other statutes we talked about, which you mentioned earlier, with regard to the issue of illegal surveillance, with regard to a conspiracy to defraud the United States, yes, there are statutes of limitations that are running. And they're running now. And within another couple of years, there will be immunity from prosecution.
Those will run out when? At the end of 2013?
Yeah, approximately that. I don't have the date right in front of me. But yes, those statutes are running out. And it's possible. We don't know enough about the acts of illegal surveillance to know for sure when that statute of limitations will run, because it may be that the acts of illegal surveillance that were authorized by Bush continued after he left office. So the statute could be extended for that reason. But we simply don't know enough facts. So we just said, well, the earliest it could run would be, we assume the last date of his administration, but it could be longer. That's a very troublesome thing, to let a statute of limitations run and to have the government fail to investigate these violations, apparent violations of the law, fully and thoroughly. I'm not saying, I can't say a crime was committed. On the face of it, it looks as though crimes were committed, because President Bush acknowledged that he authorized wiretapping, which was in violation of the statute, the FISA statute. The president, we know that the president's certification to the Congress about the war in Iraq was untrue. So we have apparent crimes that were committed, and so we need to have these investigated. But the proper way to deal with these is just to say, well, just because he's president doesn't mean he's exempt. And have full investigations and determinations by proper procedures as to whether a crime was committed, and if so, to proceed. No president should be exempted, because if we don't like what Bush did, down the road it'll be worse. Somebody will do even worse, and it won't be torture abroad, it'll be torture here in the United States, and it won't be, it'll be much, much more serious. It won't be wiretapping of, data collection. It'll be wiretapping of political dissidents, other people in the opposite party from the president's party. We saw that during the Nixon administration. That's why the FISA Act was written, because we saw what happens when president has unchecked powers to engage in surveillance.
We are speaking with Elizabeth Holtzman, who is the co-author of the new book, Cheating Justice, How Bush and Cheney Attacked the Rule of Law and Plotted to Avoid Prosecution, and What We Can Do About It. Before we're through, I want to get to that What We Can Do About It part. It does seem to me that we've transitioned from torturing targeted individuals to killing them, which by many people's perspective is worse. But I would like your comments on that, but also on the performance of the current Justice Department and how we explain that Attorney General Eric Holder says waterboarding is torture and does not prosecute it. And the president, President Obama, appears to be instructing the Attorney General not to prosecute it, and seems to be going to great lengths to protect Bush and Cheney and his predecessors from civil liability and from international law enforcement. Do we need a different president, a different attorney general? Are there state or local prosecution possibilities? I don't know how we're going to make this happen under this president.
Well, I think I'm very troubled that the Justice Department has not proceeded with appropriate investigations. That doesn't mean that in the end the investigations will conclude that crimes were committed. It's possible that my analysis of the law is wrong, that my analysis of the facts is wrong, and that an impartial prosecutor will determine that there's no prosecution that's warranted here. But you can't avoid going through that process. You can't just willy-nilly say, well, just because the president's involved, we're not going to investigate and we're not going to prosecute. That's just nonsense. And the idea that we have to look at total exemption for people who relied on opinions, I mean, who the standard isn't even relied. An exemption was given with respect to torture engaged in by federal agents if the parameters of the Justice Department's opinions were followed. Well, the question isn't whether the terms of the opinion were followed, but whether a person in good faith relied on them. It's not at all clear to me that the CIA relied on those opinions. And people understood that even with those opinions, that the law could have been violated. You can't just make a blanket determination, and that's what was done. I mean, I think it's just completely improper. And I would hope that there would be accountability, that we would understand that a cornerstone of democracy is accountability for all people, regardless of station, power, wealth, race, religion, class, or whatever. Here we have a president who's now acknowledged the right of gay marriage and recognized the discrimination that's been involved there. Well, we can't have discrimination, which is what goes on when everybody else aside from a president has to obey the law. What's that all about? So I think we need to put some pressure on the Justice Department and on the president to get them to understand that as Americans, we do not want anyone above the law, period. And there needs to be a full and proper investigation. And after that, let the chips fall where they may.
Do you see any possibility for prosecuting at the state or local level? As you may know, former prosecutor Vince Bugliosi had a plan for prosecuting the launching of the war at the local level. Presumably the wiretapping has occurred in many jurisdictions in the United States. Is there any possibility for finding a prosecutor with nerve and decency at a lower level than the federal government?
Well, I don't know if it's just nerve or decency. I don't know that a local prosecutor has the jurisdiction or the authority, and I'm very troubled about having local prosecutors start prosecuting a president of the United States, because then we would have prosecutions for all kinds of things based on local whim. We're talking about federal statutes here. It's the federal government that created the statute. It says, for example, the FISA statute of 1978, that you had to go to a court in order to wiretap somebody for foreign intelligence purposes. That statute, on the face of it, appears to be violated. Why hasn't anyone looked at that? That's not a state matter. It's not a local matter. It's a matter for the federal government to respond to. So I think you've raised a really important question, and it's a very frustrating question for people who believe in the rule of law and for people who believe in democracy as a cornerstone of our society. What seems to be happening is that jurisdictions abroad seem to be starting some investigations. How far they will get, I don't know. But in both Poland and in Spain, investigations are going forward with regard to torture, in Poland particularly, because there was a so-called black site, a site where people were tortured and waterboarded by the CIA. Polish government has commenced an investigation of that. If that truly is going to go forward and is truly going to result in prosecution, maybe that will cause the United States to say, hey, wait a minute, you know, Poland's doing it and we're not. It sends a very bad signal to the rest of the world. How can we talk to other countries or berate other countries or criticize other countries for not obeying the rule of law when we ourselves won't do that? We set a terrible example.
Indeed, it's embarrassing. We have not so many minutes left, but I wonder what you think of the status of Congress as a power within our government after these years of allowing subpoenas to go unenforced, of failing to impeach apparently impeachable offenses. You propose some measures in the book that Congress could take, impeaching the judge, Jay Bybee, who was John Yoo's supervisor, lengthening the statutes of limitations, restoring the War Crimes Act. How could we go about getting Congress to stand up for itself?
Well, I think part of the reason we wrote the book was just to inform the American people that of the facts, of the law, of the facts, and what are the possible actions that they should be asking for. Most Americans say, well, nothing was done, nothing can be done about what Bush and Cheney did. That's not true. With no statute of limitations for waterboarding, Bush and Cheney can be held accountable for the rest of their lives. And if people want to say, well, it's going to take a long time, you know, it took 27 years or something like that to bring Pinochet to justice. And if that's how long it has to take to get Bush and Cheney brought to justice, I don't want to wait that long. But nobody should give up hope that it wouldn't happen and that it won't happen. It can happen. So that's a very important thing for people to understand. And the second thing is that there are ways short of a prosecution of Bush and Cheney. For example, a truth commission. The Dutch government had an examination of its participation in the war in Iraq. The Supreme Court judge who looked at that found that the war was illegal. Britain has had a whole extensive set of hearings on the issue of how the war got started and Britain's participation. They're supposed to be issuing a report. If Britain can do that, we can't do that. Why are we so reluctant to look at our leaders' own lying, deception, short of criminal conduct? We are entitled to that accountability. Yes, Congress needs to act, but Congress has been like a wet noodle here. They simply have failed to rise to their responsibilities, which is to make sure that the law is enforced, and their responsibility is to find out the facts with regard to going to war. The president could do that on his own, too, if he wanted to.
If they wanted to, that seems to be
right.
The key. What about the International Criminal Court? It seems to me to have become an enforcement arm of NATO for prosecuting Africans. Am I wrong? Is there hope here?
Well, there's theoretically, there's jurisdiction. The Times columnist Christoph, whom I admire, said, what's Bush afraid of? Why is he getting all these countries to sign off a document saying that they're not going to complain to the criminal court? Well, Christoph didn't know what Bush knew then, which is that they were engaged in violations of the various kinds of torture conventions and so could easily be pulled before the criminal court. And, you know, the U.S. has put a lot of pressure on government not to go along with any prosecution of the United States and, of course, not to investigate Bush. I mean, the U.S. government tried to stop Spain from investigating the torture and the role of the lawyers in the torture. We should not be interfering in other governments' efforts to bring justice in cases of torture. So the U.S. government has been trying to stamp out fires all over the world, but sooner or later, I think justice will be done in these cases. Justice can be diverted, it can be stymied, but not forever.
That's a beautiful note on which to end it. Elizabeth Holtzman, a former member of Congress, an illustrious career, and the author of the new book, Cheating Justice, How Bush and Cheney Attacked the Rule of Law and Plotted to Avoid Prosecution and What We Can Do About It. Elizabeth Holtzman, thanks for being on Talk Nation Radio.
Thank you, David. Thank you, listeners.
This is Talk Nation Radio. I'm David Swanson. Talk Nation Radio is produced in Charlottesville, Virginia, engineered by Christiane Brown in Reno, Nevada, and syndicated by Pacifica Network. Until next time.